Man, I don't want to age anybody out here, but Mark Tewksbury, can you believe, like, your Olympic career was going on 3 decades ago? Like, does this blow your mind? I'm not a kid anymore either, so I'm allowed to say it. But isn't it yeah. mind-blowing in how time flies, huh?
Well, I feel the same. I don't know. I don't quite look the same, but I feel the same.
Okay, so you're telling me right now you could roll out of bed this morning, jump in the pool, and it'd be like no time has passed.
That wouldn't be the case. It's funny. I don't relate it to my swimming, just as everyday life. I feel the same, but no, I couldn't do that again, of course, but great to be on your show, Scott. Thank
you. Great to have you on. And there's a bunch that we want to get to. And I mean, let's begin with what we know so far of the Canadian accomplishments in the pool at the 2020 or 2021 games in Tokyo, and that begins with the silver that Penny Oleksiak and her three teammates won in the 4x100 freestyle. You know, Penny's got that closing ability, doesn't she? Yeah. It's like, keep it close, and then she'll take care of the rest. She is a unique talent, isn't she?
She is, but listen, let's give a shout-out for Kayla Sanchez, Maggie McNeil, and Taylor Rock to set her up in the position to be there. And because of that great lead or setup, she's perfect to anchor. I mean, her determination, and she's on her game. Like, you know, Penny's really struggled for the past few years, and it's just so incredible for me to see. She's a big ticket performer. Like, not many people are like this, where, you know, the regular meets, they're average, and at the Olympics, they're superstars. They just totally rise to the occasion. But once again, it's the Penny we knew from Rio, and it's so exciting to watch.
And you mentioned Maggie McNeil. She won a gold in the 100-meter butterfly. So
amazing. Hey, like, we waited 24 years. I won in 92, and it took till 2016 to win that next gold with Penny. And now, bam, it's just kind of, this is what we do. The next games, Maggie comes in and wins the 100-meter butterfly. And it's kind of cool because those are the two events that also we medaled in Rio to start, Canada did. But we've upgraded both. The relay was a bronze, now it's a silver. And Penny won a silver in the 100-fly, and Maggie made it a gold. So it's exciting to watch. There's obviously some real genuine momentum with this team.
With Mark Tewksbury on leadoff, and he won a gold in the 100-meter backstroke at the 92 games in Barcelona, Spain. I'm interested in the specialties and how and when it becomes clear that you're good at a particular stroke. Like, Mark, you're the backstroke, right? And others are the butterfly, et cetera, et cetera. What kind of attributes do swimmers share? And then what are some of the attributes that become differentiators as they sort of follow a particular line in the pool?
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't know if there's really an easy answer for that. I think, you know, certain body types lend themselves to strokes differently. I think we all start swimming by learning the freestyle and a little bit of the breaststroke. You know, it's a little bit of a stroke that allows you to have your head out of the water. And then as you keep evolving, for me, backstroke emerged when I was about 12 or 13. I was on a relay. No one else could do the backstroke, so I was given it, and I was decent at it, and so it just started my track down that pathway. But everyone's a little bit different. Typically, breaststrokers are stockier, a little stronger, more muscular, because they don't ever get any part of their body out of the water except for their head and shoulders. Freestylers, backstrokers tend to be a bit tall and lanky. And butterfly, it's a really particular stroke. You have to really find your rhythm. And for example, Penny chose to scratch the butterfly at the Olympics. She didn't swim the 100-fly at the Olympic trials because she just wasn't feeling she had that rhythm anymore that she had 5 years ago. So that's a stroke that can kind of come and go for an athlete.
What do you remember? This is sort of along the sports psychology line here, but what do you remember feeling, thinking in those early moments at your Olympic Games before jumping into the pool? Like, if you could take us back in time to right before the 100-meter backstroke in 92, what's going through your head in that moment?
Well, I think it's important to have a context. Like in 1988 at my first Olympics, I was in the ready room. So you have to go spend the last 30 minutes with your seven competitors. And it's a super intense experience. I was completely psyched out in Seoul. I didn't have a clear race plan. I was very, like, there was this new start that people could swim as far as they wanted underwater. I was really bad at it, but everyone was doing it. So I thought I should. So my head was all over the place. And it's no wonder I came fifth and was nowhere near my personal best. In Barcelona, I knew exactly my race plan. I was completely focused in the moment. I felt so completely in control and empowered. It was just a night and day experience. So just before the race, I was just relaxed, calm, smiling, which indicated how good I was feeling. And I had just had my race plan in my head, you know, fast and easy off the start, strong finish at the end, and just sort of let my body do the work.
With Mark Tewksbury on leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Tough result for our women's basketball team in their opener, a four-point loss to Serbia. But we have a very strong women's basketball program. Our men's basketball program suffered a, I don't want to say a setback, but maybe that one last sort of nick before it takes a jump. And where I'm going with this, Mark, with the expectations of some success in soccer as the years go on, some success in basketball. We have our share of success in the pool. Andre DeGrasse is a hugely exciting athlete among many in track and field. Where I'm going with this is we are not identified as a Summer Olympics nation for obvious reasons, right? But how do you view us as a summer nation versus the sports that we are traditionally best known for, which are obviously competed in the Winter Olympics?
Yeah, I mean, they're two different beasts, and for sure. I mean, just by our geography, we're naturally more thought of as a winter country, and we certainly perform incredibly well. The Summer Games are magical, though. They're the original Olympics. There's 206 countries, so the field is so much broader and wider in the summer, which makes it that much more difficult to make the podium. And I think what's incredible about Canada is we're so competitive in so many different sports in summer and winter. We may not dominate the entire podium, but, you know, we've got medal shots in everything from beach volleyball to swimming to athletics to judo to soccer to basketball. Right across the board, we've got a lot of great talent. So it's pretty impressive for a country of our size and our geography that we have so many competitive athletes in the Summer Olympics.
With Mark Tewksbury on leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, what are you hearing? Because I do know you're in touch with people over there. What are you hearing about the experience? Obviously, COVID has changed the look and the feel of these Olympics, the experience for the athletes. They're having to take extra precautions. There have been some positive tests within the athletes' village. What is your sense from a ways away, but being in good contact with people, of what it's like?
I think it's been a bit of a surprise in a positive way for people. I think that, you know, the no fans in the stands for sure is like no general public. But what's happening is at the swimming pool, for example, all of the swimming community, all of the officials, everyone involved in the swimming competition comes to watch every final. And so that effect, actually, that brings a couple thousand people together, still social distancing, still being very safe. The stadium can hold way more than that. But it isn't, you know, completely energy-less. And so that kind of excitement is still existing in Tokyo, which is great to hear. Of course, we're hearing, you know, the COVID precautions are everywhere and measures are super strict, which they should be. Marnie McBean, the chef de mission, thought before she went over that she wouldn't be able to get to any venues because our safety protocols were so intense. She just didn't want to risk, you know, potentially getting ill and then spreading that, cross-contaminating sports. But it looks like measures are so good and things are working so well. I've seen her constantly at events, so she's been able to switch that strategy and get out to cheer on Team Canada, which is the whole point of being chef de mission. But it's fascinating to watch. It feels on TV, I don't know about you, but, you know, it's the Olympics. It's mm-hmm. incredible how it translates well for broadcast. So I'm really grateful the games went on because 3.5 billion people worldwide are watching this thing.
What's your favorite memory of being the chef de mission of the 2012 group that went to London?
Oh, that's a tough one. I think my favorite memory was at the closing ceremony with the team getting ready to march in when I realized oh my God, we made it. Like, everyone's safe. They're going home tomorrow. Oh, mission accomplished. That was a really great moment. And, you know, the closing story was great. It had George Michael and the Spice Girls and Annie Lennox. And it's just a really fun moment. But it was one of the best experiences of my life, because when you're an athlete, you know, you've got your day or your couple of days where you're on and you perform. As chef de mission, you've got like 3 events a day or 5 events a day where you feel that intensity of like, this is our shots and you're there for the athletes. And amazing when it translates to a medal or a personal best and you're there. Very tough when it's a disaster or a miss, or, you know, someone's hugely disappointed. And I'm the first person that sees that athlete. So it was a very emotional role, but I really treasure it.
You know, Marnie's humor. So we had her on. I said, so like, what exactly does a chef de mission do? And she said, I don't cook.
I know. That's the number one misinterpretation.
Well, it's like, I don't know if that title is used for anything else, right?
Yeah, so, it's a French term, right?
Yes.
Chief of mission,
right.
Chef de mission. And Marnie, she is a good cook, by the way. She does cook, just not for Team Canada.
Yeah, she's saying, screw that. I'm taking a couple of weeks. I'm doing something else. You know, Mark, you're a Calgary kid. And an Edmonton kid who happened to play his junior hockey for the Calgary Hitmen out there in Alberta in the Western Hockey League, Luke Prokop, announced last week, came out publicly saying, I'm gay. And this is a huge, huge moment, because there's a possibility here that Luke is going to play in the National Hockey League at some point within the next couple of seasons. And if he does, that would make him really the first out active player. When you heard or became aware of his announcement, what went through your mind?
Well, I mean, it was very timely. I just the day before on Sunday, cross country checkup on CBC said, you know, there's never been an out NHL player. And then next day, bam. And he's under contract, which is what makes it unique, right? He's under an NHL contract. So he is the first sort of official out NHL player. I mean, it's great. It's long overdue. I think I've been down this road a number of times over the past 20 years where we had hockey players. They were anonymous. There's somebody in their party reached out to me to get some guidance on coming out, and then they always canceled. I never, ever got to the meeting of the actual hockey player because the fear was so intense of making that sort of public announcement. So there will come a day where this is not news. I know people are like, why are we still talking about this? There's a little bit of that sort of, you know, we've talked about this issue, but when it's a first, it's history, and we can't just make it a non-issue when it's still an issue. And if 3 or 4 more people come out like Luke, I promise we'll get to the place like, wow, gays are in hockey. We can play sport at all levels.
Yes.
And it won't be a news story anymore. But, you know, really brave of Luke. And I sure hope this starts a bit of a coming out process for other professional athletes between what he did and what Carl Nassib did earlier from the NFL. Really great progress in professional sports by these younger players.
My first thought, and you know, we're talking as two gay men here, Mark, my first thought for Luke, relating it, of course, to my own experience, was, isn't this wonderful? Because he's 19. And so whether he plays one game in the NHL or 1,000 or somewhere in between, or whether hockey becomes passé in his life in just a handful of years and he goes off into finance or whatever he does, whatever he does, he will do as he truly is. And when you're harboring that secret and you are living in the fear of that secret being revealed, it takes over your life. It encompasses everything, every thought, everything you say, the way you walk into a room. Somebody kind of looks over at you if they're having a conversation with somebody else in a room full of people, and you think, is that person looking over at me because they're talking about me? You almost become an egomaniac, not in the arrogant way, but just you assume that everybody must be figuring you out. And he has relieved himself of the entirety of that burden. And I think for him, I don't want to put too much on his shoulders, because, you know, he wants to be an advocate, but it's not his responsibility to save the world. I think for him, that's the true blessing, is he will live his young adult life as himself.
Amen, Scott.
Yeah.
You know, but listen, he's going to face a lot of crap. I hate to say it. You know, he's going to get a lot of backlash. He's going to get nasty comments on social media. That's just the reality of the world we're living in. So thank goodness he'll have his inner strength to get through some of that. That's why it's so brave. You know, when you declare yourself something, you're putting yourself out there in the public. You for sure become a role model, but you also become a target. And it's a bit of a double-edged sword. So I'm grateful that he will have his own strength to make his way through the next years of his life.
With Mark Tewksbury, before we get you out of here, we had you on in the aftermath of your awarding as you're joining a member of the Companionship of the Order of Canada. So what's life like as a companion of the Order of Canada?
I still haven't gone anywhere public that I can wear my pin. Not really.
Do you just walk around the living room and do you just walk around the living room every now and then with an ongoing, geez, this will look good if I'm ever allowed out of the house again.
T-shirts and pajamas, I tell you. Well, you know what's great? I think today Mary's being installed as the next Governor General, Mary Simon. And so that, you know, that's the first step in me actually receiving officially my companion. I've got the pin, but I haven't been invested yet. So I really look forward to that. And I'm starting, the world's opening up, so pretty soon I'll be out there with it. But it's been lovely. I mean, just for me, knowing it's there is enough. You know, it's been really, really lovely.
Well, don't need to tell you this, and don't mean to patronize you either, because you've heard it a lot. You're an important person in this country, and you're an important person in the history of this country, and any opportunity we get to catch up here, we greatly appreciate. So thank you for your time this morning, Mark, and you know we'll be on you again to join us soon.
Thanks, Scott. That was a bookend of making me feel old, by the way, starting with 30 years ago, serving and ending with my history.
I didn't call you. I've learned enough lessons that don't ever call me a legend, right?
Because exactly. That implies.
So I didn't call you a legend. And history can be a day, it can be a year, it can be a decade, it can be four decades. So,
or three.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah. Yeah, so keep that in mind and get me back down the road. Thanks, Mark.